Illinois House is back in session today after a long break. Today on the 21st, we'll be bringing you a preview of what lawmakers are talking about and go in depth on a few issues lawmakers are sure to be lobbied on. Among them, undocumented students are headed to Springfield tomorrow to try to get help with financial aid. Also, a record 3.3 million primary voters turned out in Illinois last month.
There's been nothing to indicate that it was any kind of conspiracy or something done to favor one party or the other. It appears that the county clerks just didn't estimate the turnout and did not have enough ballots available.
That's the State Board of Elections. We'll talk about what this means for all voters come November, especially given the current budget impasse. And finally, President Obama's Supreme Court nomination. Is it legal for the U.S. Senate not to take it up? All this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. This month, we're having conversations about what the American dream looks like today. It's part of our partnership, ReDream, a nationwide series that's being led by KCPT in Kansas City.
The American dream. White picket fences, 2.78 kids and a dog. It's a dream we once shared. What is success to you? What dreams do you chase?
To work a job that's going to make a difference in somebody else's life.
My name is Adriana Aguilar. My parents highlight the fact that if we didn't have resources here in the United States because we are undocumented, we always have to hustle and create opportunities for us. I started realizing I'm undocumented. I don't have access to financial aid. I cannot apply to a job in an office like my other friends because I don't have social security.
But there are still people that are left behind for a lot of different reasons. There's room, a lot of room for improvement across the board.
You just heard one undocumented student speak about how hard it was for her to get money for college. Illinois was actually one of the first states in the country to create a scholarship fund for undocumented students through the Illinois Dream Act. But activists say that's not helping enough students. Tomorrow, they're headed to Springfield to lobby for a new bill that would make it possible for the 1,500 or so undocumented students here in Illinois to apply for financial aid at public universities. Joining us now are two of those student activists, Veronica Ruiz and Maria Gonzalez. And also with us is the lead sponsor of the Access Bill, Senator Iris Martinez from the 20th District in Chicago. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Maria, let's start with you. What kind of advice did you first get when you were thinking about applying for college? What did your high school counselor say to you?
So this was back in 2006 when I was a senior at Curie High School. And I went up to my counselor because I felt like I had been lost this entire time. Nobody had talked to me about the college process. So I asked her, what can I do? Because I don't have any papers. She didn't really understand what I meant. And then I started explaining to her my situation. And eventually the advice that I received was that I should probably go back to my country. Because since I was a Mexican citizen, I will be able to have a better chance to higher education back in my country, which was Mexico. A different advisor told me that maybe I should just start working at a restaurant, then it will be an easy job to attain.
Not legally, and I would point out, right. And but they yeah. do. So in other words, it sounds like you weren't getting very good advice about not just college, but also just Veronica, I wanted to ask you, I know you're a senior at Northern Illinois University. What year were you a high school senior in the Chicago area also, right? Or you were in the suburbs, right?
I was in Chicago.
You were in Chicago also? Okay. Well, what did your high school counselors tell you?
This was back in 2007. I was a senior at Whitney Young High School. And my counselor actually told me that I should just go to the Social Security office and get a Social Security number. I don't think she really understood.
She understood that she couldn't get one. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And Veronica, I wonder what your experience has been like now as an undocumented student. How have you been working your way through college at Northern Illinois?
It's been tough. I attended community college first. I was there for about 4 years. I was working full-time, and I had a part-time job on the side as well. So it was really hard. This year has been pretty much the first year where I've been able to focus more on school and work part-time, but it's taken a lot of years of saving up.
Mm-hmm. And Maria, how did you end up? I know you have finished your schooling at IIT. How did you manage to cobble together the finances to be able to do that?
So first, I had to take a year and a half off after I graduated high school to start working full-time. And eventually, I found out about the City Colleges of Chicago. So there, I just started my education while I was still researching how can I transfer to a four-year university. And this whole time, I had to work full-time. But then I also realized that in order to get scholarships, I had to be enrolled as a full-time student. But then I also had to be involved in after-school activities, which for any person that needs to be doing all of this, it takes a great toll on your like mental and physical health.
Why did you feel like you had to be involved in after-school activities? Because that made you a more attractive scholarship recipient?
So pretty much the very little scholarships that are out there, for which we qualify as undocumented students, they are pretty much looking for the best of the best. And they require 3.0 GPAs. They require you to be involved with the community to prove that you have been involved in after-school activities. But none of them actually take into consideration that you might be working full-time to be able to pay for school. So in order to become, eligible for this scholarship, you have to do all of these things. Mm-hmm. So eventually I applied and applied and applied and was only able to receive one scholarship for $500. So now we need to take into consideration that there are very little amount of scholarships out there for undocumented students, and the scholarships that are out there are $200, $500, $1,000. You're lucky if you get one that might be $2,000. And these are a lot of students competing for the same scholarship. So in order to pay for at least a semester, you need to get possibly 10 scholarships.
Right, because I was going to ask, at IIT, how much would a semester of tuition cost, to give people who aren't familiar an idea?
Yeah, so eventually I ended up applying for IIT because they had a partnership with the City Colleges of Chicago, and I was granted the presidential scholarship. They gave me, I believe, $25,000, but at the time, tuition was $35,000.
Okay, so there was a $5,000 gap there, too. Okay, that's Maria Gonzalez. She's a community organizer at Enlace Chicago. With us as well, Veronica Ruiz, who's a student. She's a senior at Northern Illinois University. They're telling us about why they're headed to Springfield tomorrow to lobby for the Access Bill. The lead sponsor of Student Access Bill, SB 2196, is with us as well, Senator Iris Martinez. Senator Martinez, I think people who are listening to this issue, if you followed it, you know that Illinois has the Dream Act, and I think the question people might have is, why isn't the Dream Act helping students like Maria and Veronica? Because I thought that's what it was designed to do.
Yeah, well, thank you first of all for having, and I want to thank the two young ladies who I admire for their tenacity and trying to continue higher education and knowing that their goal is to finish college and become productive and give back to the community. I really believe that the Dream Act that we had in place and the funds, it hasn't been easy to fundraise, and we have so many students out there in need, and that's why I think this bill is very important. The universities were very involved in bringing this bill to us. And just talking about overall across all the public universities, the difficulties. And it's sad because, we've already made an investment in these young men and women, starting from, elementary to secondary and now college. I mean, we've already made an initial investment in them. So let's continue and finish it, And many of these students are bright, hardworking students that, have the grade point average, have all the requirements that they meet in order to have access to the very few dollars that are there in the university. And I really believe that we need to open it up because we have, many bright you know, undocumented students that are, you know, that we need to make sure we continue, you know, helping them so they can graduate and come back to our communities and become those doctors and nurses and, you know, and lawyers and, you know, and
Senator
and,
Martinez,
police.
Yeah, let me ask you, I know that you mentioned that there the money wasn't there, and I know, and Senator Martinez, I don't know if you or Maria can answer this, but I know that there's data that in 2014 there were more than 1,700 students, in fact, 1,720 students applied for scholarships for the DREAM Act. Only 26 students received those awards. Maria, was that because they didn't qualify or because there wasn't money available for them?
So pretty much the Illinois DREAM Act, what it created was a empty bank account.
An empty bank account.
Yes, that is what the Illinois DREAM Fund is. They did not allocate any funding to the Illinois DREAM Fund. They pretty much said, you all can have this empty bank account. Now go and figure out how to fundraise for this bank account.
Senator Martinez, would you say that's an accurate description of what the
Green... I would say yes. I think it was important that we try to fundraise for this fund by, you know, private entities out there that we can continue to, you know, build that fund. Unfortunately, we're still trying to work on making sure that we have successful fundraising mechanisms put in place. It's not easy. I know it's been hard the last few years, based on the, you know, on the economy, based on so many different factors. But that the intent will always be that we can continue to fundraise and make sure that there's dollars available.
And to be clear, Senator Martinez, then it sounds like that this fund is being funded by private contribute. It's different companies or individuals.
Yes.
It's not coming from state funds, in other words.
No, it's not at all.
Well,
and
I wanted to ask you about that because I imagine that when you're talking about undocumented students, I know you said that you have the support of different universities. I know the University of Illinois president, the UIC chancellor have spoken in support of this. But I know a similar bill that you all had did not pass the House last year, this Access Act. Why did that not pass last year?
I think the fact that we had, you know, the budget impasse, I think there were so many factors that were, you know, prohibiting us from really, you know, trying to deal with that specifically. Well, we had the budget impasse in place. We had, you know, funding that did not, that right now the universities don't even have the funding. So you can see we have universities that might start shutting down the next few months. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Again, there was just too many things that were unfortunately in the, you know, going on right now in the state that, you know, really did not, you know, allow us, you know, more time other than trying to fix the budget issue, especially when it came to higher ed, you know, higher public education dollars going into universities, which now has made it even more harder.
Right.
For these scholarships.
And so that's a separate issue that I think we need to take up in a minute with the budget impasse and the feasibility of this bill. But I wanted to ask you about, so it sounds like the DREAM Act was set up almost basically as if a private donor fund without taxpayer dollars. This Access Act is a different way to try to get at this problem, which is to allow students who are undocumented to apply for financial aid. Is there opposition to that within the House? Let's start with the Senate, because obviously that's your body. Is there opposition in the Senate to this?
I think, you know what, I don't think that there is. I think everybody right now, and the excuse is, that we have a budget problem. And you know what? Let me just be, you know, I don't want to be cynical and say we don't. We do have a budget issue. We have to make sure that our public universities stay open. That's our primary. You know what I mean? But in the meantime, we also, you know, some of the pushback is the finances. You know, tapping into these dollars that, you know, are basically not even there right now in some of these funds that the universities do set up to help the undocumented. So there is an array of things that are out there that we're trying to really gather and bring together. But again, the budget problem is one of our biggest, you know, obstacle right now. And until that happens, the universities are going to close if we don't address it. And so,
Senator Martinez, let me stop you there and just ask. We just have a minute left. And Veronica, I wanted to ask you, what do you say to people? You're headed to Springfield tomorrow. What do you say to people who say, we have this budget situation, we're having a huge problem funding MAP grants for students who are here in the country legally? Why should we help students who are undocumented? What would you say to them?
I would say that we're not asking for a freebie. We're not asking to necessarily take away the funding from U.S. citizens. We're just asking for a chance to an equal opportunity to apply to these funds.
Absolutely.
You know, like we've been here pretty much all of our lives. Illinois has already invested in our education. We just want to be able to give back to the state and to the country. We're not, you know, asking for free money. We're literally just asking for them to allow us to continue to work hard to earn that money.
Mm-hmm.
Can I add something?
Go ahead.
Also, with the student access bill, we are not asking for additional funding for undocumented students. We are simply asking for state universities that already want to do this to be mm-hmm. able to provide scholarships to undocumented students. So pretty much the MAP grant is not included in this bill. And then we know that there's a lot going on with the MAP grant, but that is not included in this bill.
Right.
So we are just asking for this, for a structure to be created for undocumented students to be able to receive some sort of institutional aid.
Right.
Whether the budget crisis passes or not, we are just asking for that structure to be created.
Thanks for all of that. Thank you. And thank you for taking the time to join us. That was Maria Gonzalez. She's a community organizer at Enlace Chicago. Veronica Ruiz from DeKalb, a student at Northern Illinois University. And thanks also to Senator Iris Martinez, who represents the 20th District in Chicago, for joining us to talk about Access Bill and the events that will be happening this week in Springfield. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Coming up, Illinois Public Radio State House Bureau Chief Amanda Vinicky will be joining us to also talk about things on the docket for the House, which started meeting today. You're listening to The 21st.
The 21st is made possible by the Library at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, offering the Savvy Researcher Workshop Series, including Searching the Web, Developing Effective PowerPoint Presentations, and Managing Your Social Media Presence. Google Savvy Researcher Illinois for a schedule. This is your university library.
Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The Illinois House is back in session this morning after a month off. Illinois Public Radio State House Bureau Chief Amanda Vinicky joins us now for the Capitol for a quick preview of what's on the docket this week. Amanda, thanks for being here.
But of course.
Now, we're in our 10th month without a budget, so I think the big question is, what's going to be taken up this week?
Well, really not a lot when it comes to the budget. This is committee deadline week, which in State House parlance basically means hurry it on up and everything and anything under the sun will be put before legislators in these various committees that they have to see if it has a future, if it will advance. That doesn't mean, however, that any big budget bills or a tax hike or any of that needs to go this week. Their legislators can bypass the standard rules when and if they get an agreement for the budget. This is more for any of the various pieces of legislation, like the DREAM Act students that you just heard mm-hmm. from, or any various lobbying entities, what they want to get through before the regular adjournment at the end of May.
So this week is committee week. The deadline is Friday. What kind of things are you paying attention to that committees may be considering?
Oh my gosh, it runs the gamut. There's no way to
okay, start with
get
the most exciting one.
It goes from everything for midwives and whether that would be legalized right now, the labeling of medical marijuana, the number of crew members that you need to have on a freight train. There is a whole bunch of legislation on both sides of the gun debate, be it a measure that would require gun dealers to be licensed or one that would allow minors to get a fire owner's identification card. Really, if you can think of a topic, chances are that there's going to be a piece of legislation on it. I'm following one, did a story previously on the regulation of what's called neonicotines, which is basically neonicotinoids, pardon me, which are these substances that are are harmful to butterflies and bees. It is believed in a fight between the environmentalists and the Farm Bureau.
I thought it was
going to
be something about vaping, so I was completely wrong when you said that. And so, Amanda, when you said that there's nothing on the budget on the docket, does that mean, would this be, given the unprecedented budget impasse situation we're in, would this be a week where we would see any potential solutions? Or do you get the sense from the Capitol that everybody is acting as if the budget impasse isn't happening?
Well, oh, no. By everybody is very well aware that there is a budget impasse, and that is in part why you may not see all of these measures really bubble up to the top, just that it is so the budget has sucked up all of the air out of the Capitol rooms and really throughout so much of the state. And a lot of regulation measures, et cetera, do cost money. And of course, Illinois doesn't have a lot of that right now. So it's not ignoring that it exists, but as clearly there has been this impasse for 10 months, there just doesn't seem to be any movement from either side, any give. And so that's where you're not seeing that, I think, change at all this week. We just haven't seen even, a leaders meeting between the governor and the legislative leaders that you would think could at some point bring about a resolution. So a lot of budget talk, but not a lot of budget action this week.
That's Illinois Public Radio State House Bureau Chief Amanda Vinicky. I want to bring someone else into this conversation, Associated Press reporter Sarah Burnett. She's joining us to talk about voter issues, but I wanted to bring her into this conversation as well. Sarah, welcome to the 21st.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Wonder, as you're listening to Amanda talk about what's going on, you're always keeping an eye on what's happening in Springfield this week. As Amanda mentioned a couple things, anything in particular that rises at the top you think our audience should be paying attention to this week?
I'll go back to what Amanda said, which is that the budget is on everyone's minds, but getting little action. And so, obviously, that's there. They're looking at that. There's been a fair amount of talk about this fantasy sports regulation, which certainly is not the kind of thing that, people necessarily are looking at in terms of,
and what is that fantasy?
Universities opening,
right,
and things like that. Well, it just has to do with this ongoing debate about these daily fantasy sports sites, and there's a couple of lawmakers who are trying to work out some compromise on that. I mean, it's one of those things that is, perhaps important to people who like to bet money online on things. But again, an example of the kind of thing that we might see moving along, where everyone is just waiting.
Sarah, one last question on this issue for both of you, which is, the budget impasse is the elephant in the room. As you said, Amanda, it kind of has sucked the air out of everything. Does that mean that it also has sucked the air out of a lot of what we will see as we were talking about the undocumented students who are pushing for this access bill to allow to get a chance to have financial aid, to apply for financial aid? Does that mean the likelihood of anything happening this week is lower because of the context of the budget situation? Amanda, let's start with you.
It doesn't necessarily mean that nothing is going to happen this week. There are plenty of constituencies that are going to want action. Of course, these legislators do have a general election ahead. They want to be able to tell their constituents that they've done something, they've accomplished something. It just, as I said, anything that would be an expense to the state, that is something that you could see put on hold. We could see movement this week, but then when it is time to go to the other chamber, it could get held up. So you'll see a buzz of activity, particularly this week. It just, I do think that, however, if you talk to some lobbyists and such, they'd say we've had a harder time than in typical years because in part of the election, but also because of the budget impasse.
Mm-hmm. Sarah?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I would say it's not just this week. I mean, I think it's going to be the next several weeks. I think it's going to be through the summer. This 2016 election obviously is a critical one. Governor Rauner's really looking to make a statement, and so are the Democrats in terms of a bunch of different House races. So the next several months are going to be all about, are we going to give them
posturing.
A win on this?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we'll let that be the last word for you, Amanda Vinicky. That's Illinois Public Radio State House Bureau Chief Amanda Vinicky. Sarah, if you want to stick around with me, Sarah Burnett is an Associated Press reporter. She's been covering the issue of voting turnout, electoral board. And, you know, obviously we've been talking about the state being almost through the entire fiscal year without a budget. We're 10 months in now. And while we've talked about higher education, social service agencies, and how this impasse is affecting them, we wanted to turn our focus to local election boards. We saw record turnout in the primary for the state, and we're hearing from election boards around Illinois warning that this budget impasse could make things even worse come November, especially because of Illinois' new voter registration laws. Sarah Burnett has been reporting on this, and I want to bring someone else into that conversation, Cook County Clerk David Orr, who runs the largest electoral board in the state. David Orr, thanks for being with us as well.
My pleasure.
Let's start with what we've seen with numbers. You saw record turnout in Cook County. Can you remind us, David Orr, what changes took effect on primary day? And I should add, these were changes, of course, you were lobbying for.
Yeah, a lot of great things. I mean, Illinois is really being recognized as a state that really cares about voters, so that's great. One of the things we had and got a lot of attention was election day registration. Okay, and that's particularly important because we're so mobile in Illinois, particularly up here in some of the northern counties. You have 500,000 people moving out of Cook County every year. Now, since we had over 100,000 people statewide that register on Election Day, that's an amazing achievement. We also had something relatively new called grace period registration that allowed people who hadn't registered by the traditional deadline to do that between a month out and right up to the day before the election. That was several thousand others. So we proved the need. In other words, these are 100,000 voters that would not have voted before, and our turnout would have not broken records. So we proved the need. That's one crucial thing. We also expanded early voting to that Monday. We expanded grace period voting to that Monday. We allowed 17-year-olds, if they were going to be 18 by the time of the November election, to vote in February, which is great. I mean, to vote in March. There's a lot of excitement in the schools and certainly up here, and I assume around the state, as kids got a chance to kind of get involved. We have this thing called ERIC. There's a lot of things that are not terribly sexy, but they're really
What's
important.
What's ERIC?
ERIC is basically a group of states that share data. Okay, and well, here's what's so important. I was saying not so sexy, but important, is that if you want to really encourage efficiencies in government, which we need to, we now have the ability to do almost everything electronically. Okay, and what that means, ERIC has information about all the people that moved out of Illinois, out of Cook County, moved to Indiana, moved to other states, or people that died in other states. So, number one, we can get our lists much cleaner, and that is good. It saves money. It's efficient. And, of course, if you're concerned about fraud, nothing's better than having good, clean lists. So ERIC is really important in sharing that data. Also, part of this law allows us to update people's records electronically so that these tens of thousands of people who move all the time don't have to start over. They move from Maywood, which is in my jurisdiction. It's a suburb of Chicago, of Cook County, and they move to Bloomington. And they think, oh, well, I registered, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden they realize they got to do it all over again. Tens of thousands of those people. And now, and that's why we're...
So as the law stands now, if you move from one county to another in Illinois, do you have to re-register or you don't?
No, you have to re-register. Now if you move from one, if you move from election jurisdiction, if you move one block from where I live in Evanston, which is on the border of Chicago, if you move one block, you have to re-register. But we're making a lot of progress there. Some things have already been done. Some things are new. What's important about this new law and the use of technology is we now are on the verge of able to doing all this electronically and cheaper. So when you move, like I say, from Cook County to Bloomington, you can automatically, without paper, without any cost, update that person. That's what we're working on, and that's why some of these budget issues are important to us, because everything can work much better if we're allowed to do the things that this great law allows us to do.
Sarah, let me bring you into the back into the conversation. We were hearing David Orr discussing turnout and also this voter registration. Let me go back to first what he was saying about turnout and particularly younger people. What was turnout like for the state of Illinois, first of all, or overall on primary day?
In terms of a of primaries, it was a record turnout. I mean, the previous high watermark being 2008 when Barack Obama obviously was involved. And it was significantly higher than that. We saw a lot of lines, in particular in places where there were, college towns, university, counties that were home to universities.
Right, and you saw that particularly like in McLean County, for example, right?
Yeah. Okay. For example, in McLean County, they saw a huge increase. There were like 1,500 students or people in the precincts in which the university is, and 99% of those were same-day registrations.
Okay, so it would
seem... So it would seem
that these new laws are encouraging more people to vote. Now, let's get to the second part of what David Orr was saying about this electronic database. What are you hearing from around the state, from different election boards, about the ability of people to get this electronic database up and running, given the current budget situation?
Right. Well, I mean, it's basically not happening with the speed at which it's supposed to be happening. And this is where we get to the impact of the budget situation, which is that when this law was passed, the State Board of Elections and the folks whose job it is to maintain the statewide database, and then they push data out to the county clerks, the other election authorities, there's, exchange of information. They asked for about $4 million to get contractors to come in and to implement a lot of this stuff. They didn't get any of that money. They needed, in order to participate fully in this ERIC database that David was talking about, they need to pay a membership. It's a one-time fee to join. They need to pay annual dues. They don't have authorization, they don't have an appropriation to spend that money, and so they haven't done it yet. And so what the folks at this database and at the, another one that kind of does a similar change of address exchange of information have basically said is, well, you can send us your information, but we're not giving you any of these reports back. So they're not able to then push that data out. And so what's happening is people are showing up to vote same-day registration. And I think David and I talked, when I talked to him for this story specifically, that there are a number of people who registered same-day registration who really shouldn't have had to do it that day.
Did that happen, David?
Oh, absolutely.
Had been,
and why did that happen? Because you all are not able to have access to this database yet?
Yeah, but I want to make something clear if we can.
Sure. Because
we're confusing a little bit, Eric, with these other data issues that are going on. The specific thing on this, okay, because a lot of progress has already happened on this data sharing. On this, we estimate over 90% of all the people who voted same day here in Cook County, and these are similar figures around the state, they all had driver's license or state IDs. Okay, so they didn't really need to do this. If we do like we've promised to update all this information with the Secretary of State's office, which is happening as we speak. Despite the lack of money, these things are moving ahead. I mean, remember, there's a lot of contractors in Illinois that haven't been paid for a long time. That doesn't mean they stop work.
But they are, okay.
But they could be threatening. So this is real important. If we can get this done, and this helps the clerks who had problems with lines. We were pretty lucky because we like it and we planned for it. But many of these people could just vote regularly on Election Day, okay, if we get this database working the way it should and you get this automatic registration to the Secretary of State's office. So that's one thing that's already going ahead and has some deadlines, okay, but there is always the fear that someone could say, yes, the lack of money to the vendors could get them to slow down. That, of course, we're pushing hard to continue. But that's separate from ERIC.
Okay, this is a complex issue. David, I'm hoping you can stick around for a few minutes. We're going to have to take a break, but
sure.
I want to make sure we can get into this. Okay, that's Cook County Clerk David Orr with us, also Associated Press reporter Sarah Burnett. We're talking about the issue of voter registration. We're going to continue this after the break. You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Stay tuned.
support for the 21st comes from the Library at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, helping to generate new knowledge and developing and evaluating new technologies and methodologies that better distribute scholarly knowledge. This is your University Library.
Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Right now, we're talking about the record voter turnout that we saw on primary day, 3.3 million people turning out to vote in Illinois, and what the implications of that are come November, given the current fiscal situation the state's in. My guests are Cook County Clerk David Orr, Associated Press reporter Sarah Burnett. Both of them, of course, have been deeply connected to this issue, as Sarah's been talking about the voter turnout. David Orr has been sharing with us. David, before the break, I just want to catch people up, especially if they're just tuning in. Can you explain how it stands now? Say I didn't vote in the primary and I would like to vote in November. What do I need to do as an Illinois voter?
Okay, there's a number of things because of these new laws, some of them brand new, some of them well back. First of all, a really important thing, you can register online. Very important. Okay, and thousands of people did it. Okay, now we're also seeking one reform, one additional law change. And that is traditional registration ends roughly a month before the election. Mm-hmm. And that's for having time to get everything ready. But online, everything changes. And we would like online registration to go another 2 weeks. Mm. If that would happen, then thousands of people would be registered traditionally, and they wouldn't have to do Election Day registration. So that's one thing, online registration. Besides that, there's all the other ways people go to city halls and libraries and all that kind of thing.
There's also a bill under consideration right now, right, David, or to make registering to vote an automatic part of renewing your driver's license?
Right. Now, automatic is very important. I do strongly support it. It's being debated as we speak. And what automatic would do is doing the things I was saying before, take advantage of technology, stop all this wasted time with paper and people have to re-register it over and over again. So if we know, like I say before, that you move from Cook County to Macomb County, okay, we have all this data in government, Secretary of State's office, State Board of Elections, and we simply electronically update that information. That is what the automatic registration is. We're partly there because some other things we've done, but we're not all the way there. And particularly given if this election stays as exciting as it was in the primary, which drove the turnout, if it does, there will be many, many thousands of people wanting to vote that haven't traditionally been. So we'll try and capture them through online registration and other tools. But then if we can get the automatic registration, it'll make it much smoother, more efficient, and save money.
And when we say that, Sarah, I know that there are also supposed to be notifications that are going out to people. Should voters across the state be expecting to get the notices that they normally do in terms of registration?
Is that for
the,
Sarah?
Go ahead, Sarah. The local election authorities, you know, will continue to do what you typically will see, which is where I live, I get a postcard in the mail that's just mm-hmm. reminding me of where I can go vote or different ways to go vote. What so far is not going to be funded is that as part of this law, there was supposed to be a notification to, I think it's roughly 2 million mm-hmm. people who are eligible to vote but aren't registered mm-hmm. at all. Mm-hmm. The State Board of Elections is saying, look, we don't, even if we could generate this report to get the addresses and the names of these people, we don't have an appropriation to print the postcards, mm-hmm. pay the postage, send them out. So as of now, unless there's some movement on the budget or specific appropriation for that, those notifications most likely are not going mm-hmm. out. But
let me say, remember,
how are you handling it in Cook County, David Orr?
Well, mm-hmm. first I want to make that real clear. That's breaking the law, okay? The law says we shall do it. Okay, we joined Eric.
That's breaking state law.
State law. We joined Eric, which is a wonderful thing we discussed before. Part of Eric, besides cleaning all these lists and improving data, is the 2 million people that we notify those people by postcard. Okay, we will be hurting ourselves okay, as an efficient government if, in fact, we don't do this. And by the way, it's being discussed. I mean, it may, in fact, become another legislature soon, a way to provide some money for some of these things, particularly Eric. Eric is the one that does take some money to do this mailing, okay? But it's very important because if you mail to two million people and they get this postcard and they are more excited than before and they want to register, the last thing we want them doing is all flooding my colleagues around the state on election day when, in fact, they could register earlier in these more efficient ways. Okay, so we'd be what's the phrase, pound foolish and penny wise,
penny
or whatever,
wise, pound
to
foolish.
Ignore
well,
this.
And but, as we say all of this, David, then maybe what you can explain to us: as someone who runs Cook County election, someone who's kind of facilitating all of this, how is the lack of a budget funding specifically affecting you at Cook County? What are you not able to do right now?
Well, again, I'm able to do pretty much everything I normally would. Okay, remember, I'm a bigger jurisdiction. We plan for all this. We support it. We made sure where we have big universities here, we made sure we didn't have long lines. So maybe I'm more fortunate than some. But what will the effect of things like this, if Eric is not paid for, okay, it's going to make it harder. It's going to cost money to the state of Illinois in ways that it shouldn't, and it'll hurt some of the other clerks, okay, when these thousands of people come in and they have to vote on election day as opposed to getting registered before that. So there's other things that would be denied if we don't get the budget, but I do believe it is being discussed and discussed because, remember, when you talk about Eric, Eric is many states, Republicans and Democrats. Okay, because everybody understands how important it is to use modern technology and use data, keep it up to date, and get rid of some of the paper and have your list more important.
Mm-hmm.
So we're hoping that if there is a fiscal bill come forward sometime, that people will sign on because this is a commitment I already made. This is the law of the land.
Okay. That's Cook County Clerk David Orr. Before I let you go, David, I know you have to go. Final advice for voters throughout the state, if they haven't done anything before November, what should they do now?
Just kind of pay attention to the news, but there's lots of ways to register easily. The most important and the easiest is to register online, but otherwise there's plenty of time.
And then do you have to register online in your county then, correct?
It's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you just go online. You can go to the State Board of Elections online. You could even come on mine, cookcountyclerk.com, and it would automatically take you right to the state where you could register online.
Okay, perfect.
So we want to make it easy for people, but above all, we'll be working on all these things to try and improve the efficiencies before November.
That's Cook County Clerk David Orr. Sarah Burnett, thanks so much for being with us, David.
You bet.
Sarah,
you
know, David was saying that he has the funding in Cook County. What are other boards, maybe he's saying other boards throughout the state may not be as fortunate. What are you hearing throughout the state in terms of being prepared and ready for November, given the current fiscal situation?
Right. Well, I will say, first of all, you know, David, as you mentioned, was an advocate for this bill.
Mm-hmm.
And not every election authority agreed that this should be done. And so I think there are genuine concerns out there, first of all, that this was a bill that was passed without any money for the local election authorities. And so some of the counties just, you know, flat out say we didn't support $250,000
right.
More that we had to. This was an unfunded mandate.
But what about David's point that it's the law and they have to follow it?
It is the law. It
right.
is the law, and they absolutely are doing what they need to do. I think that the primary for a lot of them was a good test. They were able to see, you know, these precincts are busier than we've seen them be in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we need to redirect some resources here. I know that several of them are working actively to try to get more election judges because, you know, that's one of those positions where they're always trying to get people to staff these polling sites. They need to get them in and they need to train them because now, in particular, if you've got a laptop that's new that the county just bought to fulfill this new law, and you've got election judges who, you know, haven't been exposed to this in the past, they have to go through training and all that. And so they're working on that. They're buying new equipment. They're buying laptops. They're trying to figure out how to pay for all of it. And they're also just asking people to do, like what David said, register in advance or at least, you know, be patient when you get there. One of the clerks said to me, people were particularly grumpy. And he's worried that they're going to be grumpier in November. So,
okay. Well, that's Associated Press reporter Sarah Burnett. Thank you so much for joining us and shedding some light on this issue. It sounds like if people want to vote in November, we're giving them plenty of time, right?
Yes,
Sarah,
absolutely.
I want to bring back someone into this conversation, Illinois Public Radio State House Bureau Chief Amanda Vinicky. Amanda, as you're listening to this discussion about Cook County Clerk David Orr, obviously, as Sarah Burnett was saying, he was someone who was a proponent of this new legislation with voters. I wonder if, as we're talking about all of these new laws that are being put into effect and there's not the funding for it, as Sarah said, you know, there's concern throughout the state that this law was passed and there wasn't funding for it. It's almost a kind of a similar thing we heard at the beginning of the hour talking about the Illinois Dream Act being passed and not necessarily having a funding structure attached to it. I wonder, Amanda, has there been any discussion this week? Have you heard anything about anyone addressing this issue in the Illinois House, voter registration and concern about this?
I mean, there's, of course, concern given Sarah's reporting. I'm sure that lawmakers themselves were distressed if they got a call from a constituent that said, hey, wait a second, I wanted to vote. I had to wait in line.
Your colleague Brian Mackey had a story saying it's not a conspiracy. They didn't run out of ballots. In fact, that's a great story. We should tweet that. If you follow the 21st show on Twitter, we'll tweet a link out to Brian Mackey's story he did last week about people saying, did they run out of ballots on purpose? And they actually did not, right?
Well, I mean, I did not do that reporting. And there's always that I know I got texts from people that were frantic. And, you know, it depends on what party you are. Hey, they're out of Democratic ballots.
Right.
And it's a frustrating situation when you're in line, when you think that you're doing your civic duty and you've got to stand there for hours. Mm-hmm. That said, of course, I mean, as you know, there's been a whole lot of frustration in the state, and it just doesn't end with people who want to vote. There's frustration for college students that are waiting on those MAP grants, or maybe university professors or other staff that have gotten layoff notices for
agencies. That's exactly what I wanted to ask you about, Amanda. As we think of the priorities of all of the things we've discussed this hour, how much likely do you see? We've heard so much conversation and so much focus and worry about the state universities, about Chicago State University in particular. How much do you think that will be on the docket this week in the Illinois House?
Well, you know, I would suspect that there will be lawmakers that will make noise about that, perhaps on the floor, mm-hmm. but there aren't any mechanisms that we have seen that would change that beyond what has already gotten attention in the General Assembly. Mm-hmm. So, again, it's just deadline week. The focus is really on all of these other pieces of legislation because they have to move now. Of course, university administrators and students would say, we need to move now on this. Mm-hmm. In fact, we need to have moved 10 months ago.
About movement, Amanda, I think the fact that the House was out for the Illinois House was out for a month. I don't know how unusual people would find that situation of the House being gone for a month while we're in this current budget climate. But the big question is, are there any meetings set this week between House Speaker Madigan, between Republican Governor Bruce Rauner? Is there any movement on that front?
Not that we know of, and neither man is particularly forward with sharing his schedule with reporters and the public. So maybe there is some sort of clandestine or last-minute meetup, but as of now, we have not heard of any such thing. Both the governor and speaker will presumably be in Springfield for the majority of the week after that month-long spring break for the House. They're in from today through Friday. And really there are a couple of days and I think 1 week here and there where lawmakers won't be back. But from now through the end of May, you'll see a lot of activity at the very least.
Well, activity, Amanda, how would you describe the mood then? And because this is an unprecedented situation that we're in. As you said earlier in the hour, this is something that is a constant point of conversation. Would you describe the mood of lawmakers as a climate where you think something will happen, or is it something where everyone's just kind of talking about it?
It's really hard to say when something will change. Could it be an offshoot of a recent Illinois Supreme Court ruling that affects employee pay? Might that move something? May it be if Chicago State really does have to close that there will be a furor or an uproar over that? We don't know what it will be because this is, of course, is just so unprecedented. You couldn't imagine having gone to this point. Will Illinois go a full year without a budget? There is very much that possibility, particularly when you do have so much state spending going forward, regardless of the impasse. So, you know, I think that the mood right now is frustrating. Frustration really is the number one, really a lot of anger and, for some people, fear. And you're going to have a lot of situations like that, what we heard, be it for student scholarships or mm-hmm. be it for lots voter registration, where mm-hmm. there just isn't money to back up what plans lawmakers want to do.
That's IPR State House Bureau Chief Amanda Vinicky. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to all of you who tuned in to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for listening.